the Upstaging Gentlemen podcast. This is Michael with Play With Your Food Productions.
And Nathan with Legendary Productions.
And our host, Alfonso Garcia.
What's up? This is take two for us, but take one for you all. So hello, everyone.
Take two for us. We will apologize in advance if we break into sporadic laughter, but... Wow, it's been quite the circus in here just for a few minutes ago, and John just crashed into a wall, which, for some reason, when you're trying not to laugh, just becomes something very, very funny.
Yeah, it was pretty funny.
So,
this is just great physical comedy, honestly.
It was.
All right.
But so, Nathan, before we start, I was just wondering, you know, we've got all these new listeners coming on, and was wondering, do you have of all the podcasts we've done, I think we're getting close to our 60th episode now. Is there a particular one you would recommend, like, some new listeners to go back and hear, or something that you think is a really good one?
Well, obviously, number one, I think, is something special. It was starting a theater / like chasing your dreams, encouraging people to just go for it, all the obstacles. But I really don't know if I have a favorite one. I've listened to all of them a couple times and kind of revisited for nostalgia purposes, or when someone else has a question, like, oh, actually listen to this podcast, I'll listen to it with them. But I think the whole through theme about just chasing your dreams and going for it doesn't necessarily mean just like theater. We talk about kind of even lifestyles, habits, interactions with people, how just to be a good person. There's a lot of cool meat throughout. But I would also just like to point out, since Alfonso joined us as a host, it's been a lot of fun too, that the trifecta of that, him asking authentic questions live on the spot. I think that's had a nice kind of feel to it. The dynamic of all of this is a lot of fun. But do you have a single one that pops out in your mind?
Yeah, I think, Alfonso, I think this is your 11th episode with us.
I believe so, yeah.
Wow. So.
I would have wore a tie.
Oh. Well, maybe we'll do that next time. I don't know. I always think of one of the ones that... I think is one. It's a really good one. Is the one on Keyboard Warriors, and I'd recommend people check that out. And again, that's something that you see in. You see that from time to time where somebody doesn't get a part that they want, or they get offended by something, and they go home and they go on social media, and they will go ahead and blast that theater company. And every time that happens, it's a nightmare. It's a nightmare for the theater company, but it's a nightmare for the actor, because, you know, like, it's just in our discussion on that, and we've seen it. Actors will get on and they will just, they'll let loose, and then they'll want to go and audition for a show, and somebody's like, yeah, I just saw your social media post, like, heck no, I'm not going to cast you, you'll do the same thing to our company, you know. And we've just seen that. And I would recommend that one to, again, like, I don't know, newer actors, anything like that. If you're wanting to know the what to do's, what not to do, definitely check out that one. Hey, do you remember when we were trying to record the Ping Chong episode?
Yeah, and we laughed the whole time.
We couldn't. John had to, like, stop it and cut it, like, seven times.
The lost episode.
Oh, it was very... I'm glad that we deleted it and made sure that's lost.
Well, Ping Chong is still there.
Oh, no, the episode is for sure. Yeah. That's number 12. I'm actually looking at it right now.
Yeah.
Ping Chong and upcoming shows. Also,
it's a great name. Great name.
You know, another good one that I liked was when we talked about the Inland Theater League Awards, even though it's since been canceled, it doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
About favoritisms and the value of those. And just, there's been a bunch. We had Dustin on, Sidehammer on as a guest, when he was filming Star Wars and his other projects.
Yeah, we had him for three. There was the Dustin interview one, and then we did a second one with him.
Oh, part two, and then
part
Theater
two,
Romance
and
was
then
the third
the
one.
Showmance,
yes.
Showmance one.
Yep.
Yeah.
We've had a few guests now. We're going to have a couple more coming up.
Yeah.
We've had Kathy, Gabe Valte, obviously Alfonso, Debbie Casey, costumer.
Yes.
We had her come in.
Yes.
Zach Michael, he was doing magic stuff, and he still is.
Yeah, we already get him back because...
Yeah,
if he's around, we should get him on for another one, because I got some questions about his latest show.
Yeah, me too. But we can worry about that later. But yeah. I think there's good things about relationships. There's a lot of cool episodes, I think. And there's some good ones. There's some that I go, oh, yeah, we already said that. But they're really good, though. I mean, at least they're real for us. and people could use what they want from them or throw it away if they don't like it.
Yep. Well, there is us reflecting on the past. Now, Alfonso, what have you for us today? Well,
I will also say they're definitely getting a reaction, so good job.
Do you have a favorite one, Alfonso?
My favorite one? You know what? I liked the Gabe interview. I thought it was just really, like, real, that situation and everything, and him just kind of being really candid about it.
Talking about how he got shot and not being able to perform again.
Right, and him overcoming that. And it was just a really cool story, and I thought it was really cool the how forthcoming he was with it. So really
Do you good. Remember when you jumped in with us? Around what episode, offhand?
Oh, that would have... Gosh. Did you guys hit 50 at that point? Had we already done 50?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think we were just doing our 50th.
No, I meant when you first start listening to our podcast.
Oh, I've been listening since the first episode. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Even before you knew us then?
Even before, yeah. That's kind of where I kind of heard from Legend. Like, I heard, like, the idea of what Legendary was. Oh, wow. Didn't really know about Legendary until Into the Woods, but I was aware of the podcast.
Oh, yeah. How'd you find the podcast?
The podcast I just found on, like, my podcast feed, as anybody would, like, just searching for, like, theater.
But, that's cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. So, all right. Yeah. So
that's cool. But that's my story. Cool. But you know what? Speaking of feedback that we're getting... We actually got this just not too long in between takes, and I have an idea of where we're going to go with this episode and the theme, but this is a really cool question, and I want to throw this in there really quick. And this was from a listener who said, if you could revisit one moment in your theater past, what would it be, and what would you change? Who wants to start with that one?
Is it negative or a good thing? Because I've had
Let's call negative.
Okay, cool.
Let's say it's a negative. Something like it's a failure. Something bad that's happened.
Okay, cool.
What would you do, Ben? Go back and change it. Let's start with you, Nathan.
Okay. Well, mine was... I have... Just so you know, there's anyone of my exes or anybody listening to me, there's a lot of things in my past I wish I could have changed. But it made me who I was today. All right, cool. That's good. Got that out there. But no, for real... I mean, that's real too. But, I would say it was an audition that I had. I think I talked about this in an episode a long time ago. But I remember I got asked from this theater company. Basically, they said, Nathan, please come do this show. I'm directing it. I want you to be this lead character in it. I need you to audition, though. Go against other people. And arrogantly, I was like, okay, cool. It was a Shakespeare show. And I know I've talked about me and Shakespeare before. But I went in there to do an audition. And I got up there, and I didn't do any prep work on the show. I just was like, oh, I'll go up there and audition. I'll cold read. Let's do it. I remember I got up there, and I remember the first, like, line of it. It was like, for these thou my love forever will be. And I don't remember after that, really. But it was like, be my love. And it was something like that. And I remember I was reading that. And as I was emoting this emotion of I thought love, I looked over at the girl who was my scene partner. And I look at her, and she's just staring at me. I'm like... What did I just say? Do I love her? Or am I saying goodbye? I had no idea. And I just went white. Like, literally, everything just went white. I flashed out, and I was like... And I knew it was my line to continue, and I just kind of stared at her, and I was like... Nothing. And then I kind of look out to the crowd, and this is where everyone was auditioning in the same room. Everyone's sitting in the theater watching me bomb this audition. Literally, watch me bomb it. And I go... Can I start over, please? And then in my brain, I'm like, oh, I know the role. I could do this role. I got it. I go again. I'm like trying to put my, what I believed at the time to be my Shakespearean in high school. We went over Shakespeare a little bit. I mean, you know, we break it down. So I was trying to, on the spot, do that. And I was like, for thee, thou, my love, for thee, I will never, whatever it was. And then I turn and look, and then I go to grab her hand. And I was like, and she just looks like she's like sad. So I'm like, am I wrong? I just stop and my face turns bright red and my eyes start swelling up with like literally tears. And I just look out to the bright light. I couldn't see the audience. I was like, give her the role. I suck. I'm just going to go sit down. And I went and sat down, and the director comes over. She goes, you were doing so good. And I was like, I didn't say this to her, but in my brain, I don't even know what I was saying. I was so annoyed that I didn't know what I was saying. She goes, I'll have you go up in a couple more minutes. It's okay. She goes and hands me this pity script so I could read the lines. Well, I didn't know this, but the Shakespeare script that I was given did not give scene direction or description. It didn't break it down for me. So I'm like, no parentheses. There's like, it didn't say like, in sweet desperation, it doesn't give me anything. So I was like, this is foreign. So long story short, I go up there one more time and I just, same girl, poor girl got stuck with me again. I end up walking. Literally, I act like I go to the bathroom. I walk out, and I didn't have a car at the time, or I wasn't driving my car. So I was like, "Mom, come pick me up." She goes, "All right, I'll come pick you up." And I was like, or I came with somebody. I don't remember why. I just start walking down the street, leaving. I just left. And to this day, I won't do Shakespeare. Like I won't be in it. I didn't learn from it. So I would go back, and I still will, and I still can. But I think that was a very humbling moment to go, bro, do your best and do better, learn. And that's something that was huge. And I have many failed stories, but that was one that really still sticks with me where I go. And that's why I take auditions so serious for people that come and audition for me. I go, I'm rooting for you. I want you to be the winner. Like, you get a blue ribbon. Yay, everyone gets a participation trophy, you know, because of that moment. So I would say that was probably one of my biggest, like, ah, you sucked, bro. But come to find out, she ended up casting me in the role, and I actually ended up turning it down because it was another show. She was like, it was so good. And I was like, maybe he was supposed to be depressed, confused, sad. I don't know what she wanted, but I gave her all those emotions for sure. But, and I probably have some other ones for, oh, I have a funny one, but I'll let Mike go.
All right. I think back to, like, my earliest days of directing. And you hear me these days say, you know, when they come in, my actors come in, having fun is a big part of it for me. And that doesn't mean that we don't work hard, and it doesn't mean that we don't try to put on the best show ever. But there is no yelling. There is no talking down to somebody. That wasn't always my case. When I first started directing, I really didn't know what a director was or did. And I went by a lot of stereotypes. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't been in a lot of shows. Like, it didn't have a bunch of different directors. And so very first show that I did, when things started falling apart, I let the actors have it. Like, I mean, I lashed out. And if an actor walked in and they were a little bit late, I let them have it. And if they didn't know their lines when they were supposed to know their lines, I let them have it. Like, I was a jerk of a director. Huge apologies to any actors that may be listening that I, you know, had in one of my shows back then. I didn't understand how to treat them or anything like that. It was just, a moment of panic came along, and I did what I thought a typical director would do. I mean, that's how you see them, right? They're with their mega horn, and they're yelling, "What are you doing? You are stupid! Are you an idiot?" You know, I would do these things. So I thought, well, that's how a director behaved. And, you know, later learned that's not right at all. That's not how you should be behaving. And now I'm so anti-yelling and anti any discouraging comments and anything like that. But just to know, you know, I used to do that stuff until I learned better, until I actually got some mentor directors that showed me how you should treat a cast and things like that. I have learned so much from early directing experiences. I remember, like, some of them were such a nightmare. Like, a very, very first show that I did, I was directing it was a high school show, and it's my very first one ever. And these people would, this is still a life lesson. Hold to your start time. So if we were going to start a rehearsal at, say, 3 o'clock, and little by little, for, you know, first rehearsal, everybody's there by 3. But then, you know, second, third rehearsal, some might show up at like 3:04, 3:05. And then it became like our lead actor would show up at 3:10. And then it became 3:15 shortly after. And pretty soon, everybody else sees that it's starting later. And so people who normally would have showed up on time, they're showing up at 3:15 now, because it's like, that's the new normal. It's like, all right, what time is rehearsal supposed to start? 3 o'clock. Okay, so we should be there by 3:15 then. That's when everybody will show up. Come to find out, like, you know, people are just standing around outside having a soft drink or whatever, thinking, like, should we go in? What's he going to do? He can't start without it. You know, it became a nightmare, like, right there. And I would get upset. I would go outside, and I would yell, and people would be like, oh, screw this. I don't want to be. It was, you learn, stuff was spiraling out of control, and I was learning all the wrong things right there. So to a first-time director, I think my advice would be don't yell, but hold firm to your start times. Hold very firm to your memorization deadlines. And any deadline you have, hold firm to it, but don't lose your temper over it, and don't raise your voice over it. That's just my take on it.
Yeah, you know what? I'm just going to lean into this topic. I had a couple questions here, but I'm liking where this is going. And Nathan, you said you had another story.
Well,
we have to go with that.
I have two. I want to talk about what I've learned as a director, and then I'll give you my two kind of funny stories. I'll be pretty brief. I'll make it shorter than normal. But as far as a director, the biggest thing, there's been a lot of things that I learned, because every show, I know I don't know it all. And I truly learn every show, something new or how to improve on something. That's a fact. But one big thing for me is I used to block and direct very meticulously. I'd give on every line where you're going, where you're coming from, where you end up, where you turn, where you lift your hand, where you grab the bottle or the paper or the pen. I was very meticulous. And those shows were, they did what I wanted, but those shows never felt real to me. They just felt like people were mimicking me. And I wanted it to be so perfect because I had this vision. But then as I did more and more, I realized my vision would come to life more when it felt real. And I think we've talked about this many times on the podcast throughout many of these. But trusting the actors, I think, was a big thing. Trusting them, giving them the parameter, where they come, where they go, what you're looking for. And if there's specific elements, if you want, like I've said before, a head turn or a body turn, or this is where you don't make eye contact the entire scene, give specifics, but to really trust your actors to do their part and bring their talents and gift to the process to become an ensemble as opposed to being Nathan's show. And that was a big change for me from like my early 20s to switch from that to, I'll say, more of a skeleton kind of blocking, directing thing, to really to trust your actors and actresses to bring their elements and then manage that and maneuver that as a whole, as opposed to everyone. Because I used to play every character. I would go on stage and walk every character's role and write down what I wanted every character to do and how that I wanted the reaction, the physicality of it. But then it just didn't seem real. It seemed fake. And I always felt like something was missing. And then I realized as a performer, what I loved was having a little bit of freedom to go, here's what I see. And the director can go, and I've had directors go, Nathan, this is what I'm seeing. And you're like, that is not what I want you to see. Or they go, this is what's being conveyed. And they're more blunt about it. I try to be a little more strategic in that of it. But I think that's something I've learned as a director, is just to trust your performers to bring their part. And then the two funny stories real quick. One time I was playing Mae Peterson in Bye Bye Birdie. I was Dustin's mother. I was playing the mother. And I had a muumuu on with stockings that had rice boobs. And I wore a muumuu and I played his mom. And I remember I blanked on a line. I was walking toward him. I was like, Sonny boy, who bronzed your baby shoes? And I walk over him. He's like, Mama. And he's like, and he said, Mama. And I looked at him and I went blank. And I was like, Sonny boy? He's like, Mama? I was like, no clue what my line was. And the problem is there was like six, seven more lines. There were six or seven more lines. And it's the cue for the song to start. And I looked at Dustin and he just looked at me. He'll disagree on this, but he didn't help me. He didn't give me a cue line. He just looked at me like, what, Mama, what are you going to say? His version's different. He can't defend himself. So I got my back here. But I just reached up and smacked him in the face. I was like, Sonny boy, smack. I just hit him. And then he looked at me as I was an abusive mom or a very scary actor. And he just would avoid me on stage. I'm like, Sonny boy. And I was trying to get back on. And he ran from me. He's like, Mama, no, Mama. And he runs me on a bench. And I walk over to my waddle, like my little walk I had as this older woman I was playing. I was like, Sonny boy, come to Mama. He goes, no, Mama. And he would not. We remember this a little differently, but he would not come to me. And finally, he just sat on the bench and like defeated. And I just sat by him on the bench, center stage, no lights there. We're supposed to be stage right. And I sit next to him. I'm like, Mama's sorry. And he goes, okay, Mama. I was like, I'm sorry, Sonny boy. We went on this tangent about nothing because I panicked and hit him in the face. And then he finally gets up, walks back to the stage right, and I walk over to him, and I could not remember my line still. And I went, "Sonny boy," and he goes, "Mama." And it's like a repeat. I feel like we just lived this. Finally, I look at the audience, and I just go, "Hit the music." And then the music just started, and then and I sang the song with the best of my ability. But that was pretty embarrassing. And then one other time, I was supposed to be on stage. I was filling in for this show. Shane was already filling in for the role, and someone on the cast got sick or some family emergency, so I got put in the show last minute.
Shane is in your brother?
Yeah, my brother Shane. And we were like best friends in the show, and basically I'm falling in love with this girl, and I'm talking to him about it, and then the song starts, and I go, "I don't know how to put into words, but I'll try," and it turns into this song. I'm paraphrasing. There was more better dialogue than that. There was better dialogue than Mo Better. But there was better dialogue than that. And I'm talking to Shane. The music starts. And as soon as the music starts, the lyrics left my entire, not my brain, my body. And I look at Shane, I go, I just stare in this fear of like deer in headlights, baseball bat to the head, whatever you want to think of. It left me. And Shane's looking at me just like, and I'm like, I just grab his shoulder very calmly and I go, "From all that I told you, can you tell me how I love her?" And Shane goes, "What?" Just like that. "What?" I said, "Can you help me express how I love her?" Shane looks at me like he's going to murder me. And the little chime comes on where the music starts. And Shane's now singing my solo, putting it in my version of like my words. He's like, "You love her like this, and she makes you happy," whatever the lyrics were, I still don't know. He sings my solo, and then he has to sing a response to my solo. So then Shane's singing, he adds this quick line, he goes, "If that's what you think and that's what you feel," then he sings his solo. Well, the rest of the scene where we're camping, whatever the scene was, he's pinching me, poking me, he's like so mad. The next day, we're on stage, and my song comes on for that weekend, and it starts to play. I'm like, this is how I feel. And I look at the audience, I turn and look, and Shane's gone. He left the stage. So no matter what, I had to know the song. That luckily I did. But he just walked off stage on me. He's like, "I wasn't singing your song again." I was like, "Bro, I needed..." It made me panic more when he left, though. I was like, "Wait, what's my song?" But anyway, so I've had a lot of flubs, but that was just two that stand out in my brain. So anyway.
Do you think that actors really like ever fully let go of those mistakes, or is that something that they hold on to for better or for worse?
I hope so. I mean, that's the good stuff. That really is. Those are your war stories, and those are like showing off your scars. And it's like, man, this happened to me. Check out what happened to me in my show. And I think that it's fun when actors get around and like they do relive those old memories. So yeah, some of the best stories are sitting there, your old theater experiences and all the crazy stuff that happened. And nobody that's not involved in theater is going to understand that stuff. But man, yes.
I think that's part of the camaraderie. It's kind of like, I'm not downplaying this, but it's kind of like what they talk about, you know, sitting around the campfire, the old war stories. I'm not comparing it to war. I think war is way crazier and way more. I appreciate what those dudes and dudettes have done for us. But that's how I imagine it, though, that sense of camaraderie. We could share those stories together and have that unity and bring that connection. It kind of builds this unsung family feel where you're like, dude, that happened to me, or I blanked on a line, too. Well, I smacked someone in the face, you know?
I have to share my story about where I've blanked on a line before, and this was years ago.
Which time at my theater? Well, oh, I'm not just kidding. Theater. I'm just kidding.
No,
just kidding.
I've recovered on those ones. This one didn't recover. This had to have been maybe 12 years ago. And it was a church that brought me in for Easter services for that weekend. So this was Good Friday, and they wanted me to play Jesus. So I said, yeah, no problem at all. And this was Tuesday, and they gave me this script on Tuesday. And it was quite a bit of lines, but they said, don't worry about it. The way you'll be staged is you're just coming out to a table, and it's a group of children. You say your lines, and the lines will be right in front of you, though. So you can actually just kind of glance down, and it's not going to be a big deal. Yeah, no problem. Well, there's a couple things I didn't factor in. One of the big things I didn't factor in was that I wouldn't be wearing my glasses, because Jesus didn't have glasses. So I didn't have my glasses on. So the lines were there in front of me, but I couldn't see them. So what happened is, first of all, I had to get prepared in a drum kit on stage. That was my dressing room. And so I had to squeeze into this drum kit, change into Jesus, and just wait for my cue. So I sat there huddled for 30 minutes, just waiting for like the lights to go down. And when the lights were going to go down, I come out as Jesus, and I say my lines. And I just remember saying, I say something to a kid. He asks me something, and I say, and I tell him, this is how you get to heaven. And then somebody else tells me something else, and I said, that is not how you get to heaven, or like, that is not how you get to where I am. Well, let's just say I mixed the lines up. What happened is I go up there, and I say the first couple of lines, and then I blink, I look out, and I just look down, and I can't see, so I just press my head all the way down to the table. And I have got, I'm looking at it and just reading with my head pressed down to the table. And then I look up again, and then just, I go blank again, and I could hear like a parent, come on, Jesus, you got this, Jesus, you got this. And I'm like, this is the worst, this is the worst, and I'm living it right now.
Yeah, you can't fail yeah. Jesus, man.
And so what happened, the kid says his line, but Jesus, how can I get to where you're going? I blanked, and I said the other line, you can't go where I'm going.
Oh,
and I heard an audible gasp, and then I stopped. I was like, no, but just, and then I backtracked to the line, and I put my head down to the table, and then I looked up, and then they just brought the lights down, and then they cut to a video, and then I had to do it for a second group, so all I had to do was go back to the drum kit as Jesus, and the next set was like an hour away, so I sat in that drum kit huddled for an hour, like, what just happened to me?
What happened to you? What'd you do to that kid's salvation?
I ruined a lot of kids that day. But the audible gasp from the parents is something that'll stay with me forever.
You didn't get a chance to practice to do a dress rehearsal, did you?
Nope.
Yeah, I was just saying.
Nope.
Just because that's something that would have been easily discovered in a dress rehearsal. Yeah. And I had a moment like that, too, where we didn't practice everything as we would in the dress rehearsal. Mm-hmm. And it came back to bite us. And, I mean, it was the littlest thing. So we get the piano player, and she's got her sheet music, and it's done to live instruments and everything. And I'm conducting, that you know, the live instruments, and it's a children's musical. I'm doing that. We do the dress rehearsal perfectly fine, and then comes the night of the performance. Such a little thing. All those people in the room, it starts to get hot. So someone walks over just as we're starting, like we just are starting to play, and they turn on the air. Well, we'd never practiced with the air conditioner before, and the piano was right under the air vents, and the pianist music flew everywhere.
Ooh.
I mean, the sheet music went flying. She had like five pages like lined up, that, you know, first song, and I'm like, no, like, ah. If we would have practiced that with added in the air conditioner, we would have known about that. But there goes the importance of you have to practice everything as you are going to do it in the final dress. No surprises.
As a director, have you ever had a show or a scene in a show go so far off the rails, that you actually had to stop, bring the lights up, and said, we got to start over, or we have to do that again? Have you had a moment that's happened?
Yeah, I definitely have done that. Was it? Oh, yeah. We've had a couple of those where a cast member unfortunately fell and broke her foot, so we had to just stop, actually. But I remember when we were doing, I forget what show we were doing, and the mics for the first, like, 10 minutes were, like, bad. It wasn't anyone's fault. The just signal was dropping. The audience, you could see them going, what's happening? The lights just weren't, everything was just not firing right. And I walked down and just said, hey, we're going to stop the show and we're going to take this from the top. We're going to get everything dialed in real quick. And I was like, Mark, how long till we get this dialed in? And it wasn't his fault. Even if it was, it doesn't matter. I was like, how are we going to fix this? I said, you guys, let's start this over so you guys get to see the show from the top. So I've done that a few times. I've also had it where I've told, either through message, through ClearComm, I've told them, start the music, skip the scene, just jump to the song, because then we'll know where we're at.
I've gotten that note before.
I've done that with you. I've said, Avon, just go on, start the song, this scene's not happening.
Yeah.
Or the cast members are missing their scene. I'm like, just go on, your scene's going. You're like, right now? I'm like, yep, go. And that's definitely happened a few times. it's live theater, and the audience is usually pretty forgiving with that because I think that's part of the joy of live theater. But if it's a part that's going to take away from their journey or the story, I would rather, as an audience member, I'd rather you go, you know, we're sucking right now. Let's stop and we'll figure this out.
I can definitely understand that from a technical point of view. I'll never forget I had high school, and I don't think this was a particularly good learning moment, but we had a this was in high school, and we had one of the students who went on stage, and he muted his mic, which was obviously a big no-no. You don't touch the mute. So he went out there, and his mic is hot, but it's muted, so you can't hear anything. And he's singing his opening number, and lights go up, and the director goes over the mic. Okay, well, our Aladdin decided that he wanted to turn his mic off, so that's obviously a no-no here. So because he wanted to be unprofessional, we're going to have to start this show over.
They were that blunt?
Oh, yeah. He was very blunt about it. I remember thinking, well, that's a student. That doesn't seem like the most effective way to teach
him. I'm pretty honest.
And he's going to have to go out there and do a number right now.
In front of everyone.
In front of everyone, so... Yeah.
I would have walked out and made the flying carpet crash. I'd be like, you want to do that?
Yeah.
Like, let's go.
Like, all right. Yeah, one jump ahead. All right, here we go. All right. But yeah.
I think we're actually like getting close to wrap up time. So do you have another question you want to squeeze in?
You know what? I would close out with, do you think that removing any of that failure from any of those failures would actually help you in any way, or did they help you grow?
No, I learned so much from the failures. As hopefully everybody will learn from their failures. If you have a failure and you don't learn from it, that's a big waste.
I think being honest with yourself, accepting the fact that you can and will fail. Sometimes we have to put this persona on that we're perfect, we're the best, we're already great. I think that's the bigger lie. Being willing to go, okay, what could I learn from this? Even though I've done this for blah blah years, what can I take from this and how can I grow each time? I think that's the bigger message, really. But I wouldn't change anything that I've, as far as theater, as far as what I failed or what I've grown from, I would keep all that, and I use that every time. Now in life it's a different story, that's a different podcast. But I definitely think that'd be, I think we should do maybe next time, our next episode we do a part two, we could kind of share some more fun stories. Maybe bring in some guests that have some crazy stories, too. I think it would be a cool way to make this a part two. Because I know people always ask, oh, tell more stories about you guys. What have you gone through? What have you done? I think that might be fun.
It is live theater, and anything and everything can happen.
Good stuff, so, yeah.
You know, advice to new directors, be ready for anything and everything to happen. This may not have anything to do with your actors, man. I remember... I was doing a show one time, and there just happened to be electric brownouts going on in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, you know, we were warned, hey, you know, there is a chance that right during your show, the whole block, the whole neighborhood block could lose its electricity. So have at it. And so we're sitting there like, oh, man, worst case scenario, what's going to happen here? Are we going to, like, stop the show, cancel the show? Can we bring in lights? Like... flashlights, can we bring in some high power flashlights? You know, what can we do? Man, we've had audience members who have had medical emergencies in the middle of a show, had to stop for it.
The Redlands Bowl had something like that, Mike, where the power went out because it was overheating, so it was so hot that summer. It was actually a Wayne Scott show. I think assisting him, or I was on his team.
Who's that?
He owns a theater locally. Okay. Lifehouse Theater.
Got it.
And he's local, and what happened was all the power went out. It's still real. He ended up having us with the tech guys, literally great. The tech guys, Tim, Shane, like all of us had cars. We went and pulled our cars up to the bowl like grass and shined the lights at the stage. And we were restarting, I think it was Beauty and the Beast the first time, starting the show over with headlights. And then the power ended up coming on a few minutes in and it started working. Everyone got quiet, no microphones, and we just made it work. So it was Wayne's idea to keep it going. The audience was there for a show. Let's do it. So anyway, let's wrap this thing up.
Good stuff, guys.
Second kill Mike.
No, and I appreciate the question as well, because, we had an episode, and that question came in, and that's way better. Let's go with that. So go over to Brussprout and click on that fan mail button, and please ask us some more questions. But for the Upstaging Gentlemen podcast. This is Alfonso.
Yeah, hit us up with your questions or just say hi, or if you want to share some of your crazy theater experiences. If you don't want to do it on the fan mail page, I'm not sure if that gets posted on a wall or not, or maybe it can or can't. Sure. But you can always hit us up on Facebook or Instagram as well. Shoot us a message, really. We'd love to hear from all of you guys. Any of you guys, some of you guys, all of you guys.
Yeah, we'll share your stories for sure. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, we'll give you a shout out. This is Michael with Play With Your Food Productions. We'll catch you guys next time.
Later.
See you guys.